Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet.
Hello and welcome to this, the latest edition of ESSR feature here on Eat, Sleep, Suplex, Retweet. I'm Steve Wilson, and to conclude what's been a long ass, but for other people, the most enjoyable week of the year in WrestleMania week, we are going to be looking back on, arguably to a lot of people of mine and my co-host age, one of the greatest WrestleManias of all time. Yes, it's been 20 years, since Brock Lesnar nearly concussed himself live on TV from some height. We are looking back, of course, at WrestleMania 19. Yes, 20 years since WrestleMania 19. What a time to be alive that was. One of the greatest periods of WrestleManias, I think, of any lifetime. Definitely of my lifetime, anyway. Before we get on to talking about that, and before I introduce my guests for this particular show, I'm going to do the usual plugs. You can find us on all the good socials. There is bad socials as well. It depends what you feel about them. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, at Suplex Retweet. We're also available on all good podcasting networks. If you're not subscribed to us already, and this is the first time you listen to us, hit the subscribe button on whatever you're doing. If you use more than one podcast network, search for us on that. Subscribe to it too. All that helps. And joining me for this particular show, he is one of our usual panelists on these pay-per-view review shows. It is, of course, Chris Murray. Chris, how you doing?
Hi, Stephen. Thanks for having me on. I'm so excited for this one. So, to let people a little bit behind the scenes, about maybe like a month ago, Stephen posts in this group chat we've got, and he goes, right, it's almost time for us to do our look back pay-per-view, because we've got certain people that do the current pay-per-views, certain people that do, like, you know, do your Japanese wrestling, your impacts, and then I'm in the crew that go back and look at old pay-per-views. And Stephen said, which one should we do for this week? And we didn't really have anything that was like jumping out at us. And I just happened to go back through this month in history and go back like 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, and then got to 20 years. And I was like, Stephen, oh my God, it's been 20 years since WrestleMania 19. We have to do this. It's the perfect choice. One of the best WrestleManias of all time. Spoilers for my thoughts at the end of the show. Was so happy to go back and watch this over the weekend. I can't believe it's been 20 years. Like, I remember this WrestleMania crystal clear.
I am very adamant that the best streak of WrestleMania is 17 to 21. If I had to watch any sets of pay-per-views, I would watch, you know, 17 to 21. 21's, I don't look back as fondly at 21, but I feel like it needs to kind of be included in that one. But the 17, 18, 19, 20, it's just like, I think it helps that I was, you know, young, vibrant in my heyday. I say my heyday, I was at school. it's a fantastic pay-per-view to watch. It's one to recommend. Our usual co-host for these shows, Gary Kernahan, who couldn't join us for this recording because at the time of recording, he was getting ready to go to WrestleMania, which he would be at by the time the show's out. Lucky for him. But there was some other suggestions in there. I think there was the WrestleMania 9 that was mentioned, which I don't think Gary would have been very fond of doing, given how it ends with Bret Hart and Yokozuna. So I think 19 was a very, very good choice to go with here.
This was perfect for me, Stephen. I'm going to give you the backstory because this was my very first WrestleMania. Like, I saw WrestleMania 17, obviously the best WrestleMania of all time, but I'm pretty sure that I was given it on tape, and I think I was given it, like, maybe months afterwards. Like, I'm pretty sure, you know, wrestling had been back on, and I knew what had happened for a good while afterwards. The first wrestling I ever remember watching was Unforgiven 2000. Someone gave me that on a tape. I've mentioned that on a ESSR show before. And then I had WrestleMania 17 on a tape. But right around WrestleMania 19, that was when my mum got Sky Sports for the first time. Up until now, I just did the old SmackDown bottom line combo on Sky One, which I know is like lots of people's gateway to wrestling for a long time. So this pay-per-view in, what was it, April 2003? Or the tail end of March? Tail end of March, and I got my mum to tape it for me when it started, and then I watched it like that night, so what would have been Monday night after school. I didn't know a thing about what was coming up on the show, and the mental thing is as well, watching it back, I think that when I watched it to talk about it with you, I think that was probably the first time I've watched it since that night in 2003. So it was so much fun to look back on. I think that what you just said about 17 to 21, absolutely spot on. But because 17 is so good, I feel like some of the ones that came immediately after it are kind of forgotten about. Like, if you look at this card, it's so strong. It's arguably stronger than 17 was because, you know, 17 was very much about storyline, whereas this was just the greatness of so many wrestlers on one card. Had a fantastic build-up for the whole pay-per-view as well. So yeah, you know, we'll discuss this more at the end, I'm sure, but it's right up there in the conversation of one of the best ones ever.
Yeah, I think the visuals of it, I think, has always stood out to me. WrestleMania 90 took place in the Safeco Field Stadium in Seattle, Washington, now known as the T-Mobile Park, for anybody who's familiar with baseball, home to the Seattle Mariners. I think I pronounced
Mariners.
That right. Mariners, yeah. Oh, are you always going to get that wrong?
I think they mean, I think Mariners are fishermen. I don't know for sure.
I wrote it down. I'm like, Mariners, Marinas, I'm going to get it wrong. Whatever way, I was going to get it wrong. I knew I was going to get it wrong. But I thought it looked such a cool visual to have that one. I like the a lot of people don't like the baseball stadium shows. It's a few rumbles they've done recently in there. I think it's maybe it serves people because of the way they come out. They come out from the kind of, you know, the
dugout.
The dugout. They come out from the dugout. Well, as this one, the stage is properly set and looks really cool. And it's got that, what's kind of a trademark of these baseball stadium ones is that kind of diagonal ramp, which I think is really cool when it's done right. And this particular show, I think, does it particularly right. This was actually the record attendance still for this, the T-Mobile Park Safeco Arena, 54,000. Whether you want to believe 54,000 were in the attendance, it's entirely up to yourself. I'm not going to judge you. I'm just reading what's been given to me officially here.
I think the reason stuff like this happens is because the only thing that can really compete with WWE for attendance records is basketball games. Because if you look at Safeco Field, its purpose is to be a big empty field. No wonder WWE has broken the attendance record for it, considering they cover all the grass and human beings. I think WWE hold a lot of attendance records for venues that haven't been turned into either a basketball court or an ice rink, which I think is a great thing. I absolutely loved this set. Safeco Field, I think, up to this point, might even be the best looking pay-per-view that WWE have ever done. I think that if you look at 17 was the first time they did the first time in many years since they did a really massive arena. It's like an indoor NFL stadium in Houston, the Astrodome. Forgot there for a minute. And then Safeco Field, which is obviously technically outside. It's got a roof on it, but it's got like bits of it where you can see outside. It just felt massive. Like, at the very start of the pay-per-view, there's this big wide-angle shot where you see all of the lighting rig that's coming down from the ceiling. The corner entrance, as you said, I just thought it all looked amazing. My stupid fun fact early on in the show, this was the first time that anyone had ever hung a lighting rig from the Safeco Field roof. So thankfully, here we are 20 years later, it didn't collapse and it didn't kill all the wrestlers on the page, on the card, thankfully. But yeah, it looked fantastic.
Yeah, absolutely. I would fully agree with that. Quickly, before we go on to talk about the actual wrestling in this one, I like to do some facts about the arena and the stuff we got on the day of this particular show, March 30th, 2003. On the T-Mobile Park Safeco Field, it was actually the home to the Microsoft annual general meeting until 2012. 20,000 people would go to the Microsoft AGM every year, which is some particular number. I don't really know if 10 people achieved my work's AGM. Not really much happened on this day other than WrestleMania, but sadly, the English did beat the Irish 14-6 in the Six Nations to secure the Grand Slam that year. Less said about that, the better. And Chris, this is a nice fun fact for people of our age. Top of the UK singles charts at this point. Could you guess what was top of the charts at this point?
Put me down for Yeah by Usher.
I think that was round about this time, but it was not. This is a round about the time we tend to see a lot of charity singles come out in the UK. And this was a song which featured a popular UK TV family and a talent show runner-up. This was Spirit in the Sky by Gareth Gates and the Kumars.
Kumars? Oh my God, do you remember that? Oh, literally, oh. I just had flashbacks. As you said, charity single with a family, I was just like, oh my God, I forgot all about this.
To get in the way a bit of current events as well, about 1 month later, Busted got their first UK number one as well.
And they just got back together.
Yeah, You Said No was their first UK number one, which if you'd ask a lot of people now, maybe people that were in high school, what's Busted's first number one? I bet you so many of them would say Year 3000.
But I could not one. Have told you that. You Said No. I don't think I've ever heard it.
Oh, it's a class tune. It's a class one. I asked you to dance at the disco.
Oh, yeah, remember
that. That one. I don't want to butcher it. I would have David Hockney hates when I sing, so I think if I start anymore, he's just going to rant about the full show.
In David's honour, should we make You Said No the intro song to this podcast?
Oh, God, absolutely. I'll get that done. Absolutely, no problem at all. So people, if you've listened, obviously, 10 minutes in, and you heard that at the start, That's why. Right now, let's go. Let's get on to the matches here. Do my lyrics from Crack Addict, Limp Bizkit, which was the theme song for this particular show. Absolute banger. WWE's favourite band, apparently. And if you ask them that now, probably not. We have the opener here, which is for the WWE's at this point now. For the Cruiserweight Championship, we have Rey Mysterio, the challenger, in his first WrestleMania, taking on Matt Hardy, version 1, with Shannon Moore. Chris, you got to love a good Matt fact to start off a WrestleMania.
Yeah. This is the first time I've seen this entrance in years, obviously. The two Matt facts we got were, one, this is Matt's fourth WrestleMania. I had to go back and look it up because, of course, we had the Triangle Ladder match at WrestleMania 2000. We had TLC 2 at X7. And then the third one I'd completely forgotten about was this random Four Corners elimination match at WrestleMania 18. It's one of the manias that I've seen the least, so I didn't have any memory of this. But yes, most importantly, it was Matt's first solo appearance, fourth time overall, and first WrestleMania appearance for Rey Mysterio. Let's just get this out of the way, Elliot. That's one of the best things about this WrestleMania, is it is first appearances for so many wrestlers. And I thought that worked really, really well. And the other Matt fact, now I want your thoughts on this. I think this is a great point that Matt makes. He says Matt wonders how they did WrestleMania without him. Well, you could argue that Matt Hardy's legacy on WrestleMania is still felt to this day, because, you know, without Matt Hardy, we wouldn't have these, well, what started out as TLC sort of evolved into the Money in the Bank ladder match, which then evolved into like a ladder match for a title every year. You wouldn't have that if it wasn't for Matt Hardy doing the great work all the way back to WrestleMania 2000.
Yeah, let's be brutally honest there. Matt Hardy probably still wonders why WrestleMania existed without him, and probably wonders why it's still going on without him, as he's currently in AEW doing something with Hook. Don't get me started on AEW Matt Hardy. I could be here all day. But yeah, this is it's a five minute match, which is short, like really short for a WrestleMania at this particular point. It's Meltzer gives it 2.25 stars. So I'm not going to gloss over that one, get out of the way now. This match is so 100 miles an hour from the minute the bell rings. It's constant. This is a Rey Mysterio is absolute prime at this particular point. He's been about for years. Obviously, Chris, you like myself, you followed the WCW stuff, and he'd been WCW for ages, but he was still relatively young at this point. And it was just a live wire throughout this one.
He was phenomenal in this match. Like, I actually was writing down every move that he did because I was just so amazed by him. Because obviously you watch Rey Mysterio now for what I'm into my 20th year of watching him. I didn't watch him in WCW because he was in the kind of later period. And I just think that every move he did looked amazing. He had this like corkscrew dive over the top rope. He did a top rope leg scissors. You can actually see how much his offense has evolved over those 20 years because he doesn't do nearly as much flippy shit as he did back then. I liked his outfit. Was that a tribute to Daredevil?
Yeah, it was a Daredevil one. I think the original film with Ben Affleck came out around about this particular point. It's the only good thing associated with the first Daredevil film with the studio's outfit and that WrestleMania.
And when I was a young boy, I obviously, much like many people who watched wrestling around this time, absolutely fell in love with Rey Mysterio. He was brilliant from the first day he came into WWF, and he did that big dive off the cage onto the Un-Americans with when he was teaming up with Edge. And he just looks amazing. He actually kicks out of the Twist of Fate in this match. And at that point, you know, less than 5 minutes in, I was convinced he was winning the Cruiserweight Championship in this match. But it wasn't to be.
Yeah, I mean, I remember fondly his moveset was the best moveset to do for SmackDown Here Comes the Pain. because they had the West Coast Pop, which obviously he can't do anymore because his knees are absolutely got done in. But the West Coast Pop looks absolutely phenomenal. But the two styles clash so well. I mean, Matt Hardy's wrestling a different style than he wrestled in a lot of those matches you mentioned earlier on. He's got this gimmick where he's trying to lose the weight for the Cruiserweight title. He's so funny to watch at this point, Matt Hardy, because he knows he's daft. But it kind of makes sense why, you know, further down his career he could evolve so easily. Not many people talk how much he was able to evolve in his early career with this stuff. But yeah, it just works absolutely brilliantly. Unfortunately for you, Chris, obviously Ray doesn't get the win. He loses out to Matt Hardy here. Matt Hardy does a very heelish move to win the match, kind of countering the moves and kind of holding Ray down to get the pinfall here. But it's short, but it's a sprint. And, you know, a nice good sprint is kind of, I'll get the crowd going. And that's exactly what you need to do for a show like this.
It was a perfect opening match. It was much like the sort of 2000s to 2001 matches where it would always be like the Hardys or Too Cool, like guys that could just get in and out and really, really warm the crowd up. I feel like as well, like I've just talked about how Ray's offense looked amazing. I want to throw in that Matt Hardy's solo offense is brilliant as well. Like the side effect, I think, looks brilliant. He's got this like dropping suplex thing, Twist of Fate, obviously, as well. I think that Matt Hardy is a singles wrestler in the cruiserweight division. Like, that shouldn't make sense, but I thought he looked absolutely excellent. And I remembered the ending of this so vividly, even though the last time I saw it was probably 20 years ago. Like, rolling up Ray, grabs the ropes for the 1-2-3. It was such a quick match, but as you say, it was a sprint. Can we, before we move on to match number two, take a quick diversion to talk about someone else in the ring? So I loved seeing the old blue SmackDown ref shirts, as you said, but I had no idea who this ref was. I just didn't recognize him. I went away and looked him up. His name was Mike Sparks. And I was like, who are you, Mike Sparks? And where have you been in wrestling? But he's the son of Dave Hebner, or nephew to Earl Hebner, if you will, who's also on the show a bit later on. I was like, I don't remember him from this era at all. According to like Pro Wrestling Wiki, he was only in WWE 2002 to 2004. I just had no memory of him whatsoever. But shout out to Mike Sparks. He makes another appearance later on as well.
Mike Sparks, yeah, he has a bit more high-profile moment later on in the show for one of the other matches that goes on. But yeah, very fun match here. As you mentioned, Matt Hardy, the Cruiserweight division, baffling. He's, I think, at his prime, in-ring, he was better than Jeff, but Jeff just had something different about him that kind of the crowd loved, you know, which was what Matt just maybe lacked at points. But yeah, version one Matt Hardy is just... And if you actually go on to WWFmattitude.com, it takes you to WWE.com.
That's so funny. I did that yesterday while I was watching the show. WWFmattitude.com. Yeah, it just redirects to WWE.com.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Yeah, yeah. It's weird because, like, this wasn't like a fluke win where Rey Mysterio won on SmackDown the next week. Matt ended up holding the title all the way to the... I remember it being the season premiere edition of SmackDown, which I think was in June of that year. That's how long it took before Rey Mysterio actually got the belt off him. So shout out to Matt for just having a great run with that title.
Mm-hmm. First and only time Cruiserweight Championship main event of the show on WWE. So obviously until they did 205 Live, which was all Cruiserweights. We now go on to match number two. I think it's safe to say it's maybe the low point to many people of this particular WrestleMania. We have The Undertaker taking on Big Show and A-Train in a handicap match. Now, everybody knows this was meant to be a tag match. This was meant to be the big debut showcase for a man that WWE were pushing to the moon at this particular point, Nathan Jones. However, in the days clearly before leading up to WrestleMania, WWE realised that Nathan Jones was not ready for a WrestleMania match, as on Sunday Night Heat, he gets taken out by A-Train and the Big Show, thanks to some help from Nunzio of the FBI. Good to get an FBI mention in there. And we get this particular handicap match. This, Chris, isn't a classic. It's kind of... They kind of seem like this match was only done, as I mentioned, to give Nathan Jones that showcase. And the minute he gets taken out of the match, it's just a bit of plodding along until they can bring him out again just to do his quick spot.
Yeah, it was very, very strange that they did this, but I think looking back on it, I can understand why they did it. Nathan Jones hits two moves in the match. I think for Undertaker, probably goes so far as to say it might be his worst WrestleMania match, which is crazy to think of the, like, 23, is that right? 23 he's had? 22 and 2? No,
he's
21
he's
and 2.
He's had some stinkers, but yes, we're probably up there, yeah.
Yeah. I forgot that he was still using Limp Bizkit at this point. I thought by this point he was on to, like, Big Evil or whatever it was.
I think he went to Big Evil, and I think he ditched it for Limp Bizkit again once he turned face again.
Oh, okay, yeah, that makes sense.
And this was kind of the point he was doing that one, but...
But this was
2003 Undertaker's not, like... Not his best year.
This entrance, though, watching Limp Bizkit playing live on the stage at WrestleMania in front of easily Limp Bizkit's biggest crowd that they'll ever have in their career, absolutely loved it. Here's a fun fact that I know as a hardcore Limp Bizkit fan. This band you see before you is not Limp Bizkit.
Oh, I'll explain. I've seen something about.
But basically, in 2001... Wes Borland, the famous guitarist of Limp Bizkit and the brains behind all of their amazing guitar riffs from, you know, Chocolate Starfish and all the albums that came before that, he left in 2001 and didn't come back until they put out an album in 2005. So for those 4 years, they weren't Limp Bizkit. They were Limp Bizkit, all one word and all lowercase. And the guitarist you see on stage is Mike Smith. And they kind of changed a bit. They became a lot more shouty and screamy as opposed to kind of their crossover they that they did.
They did a version of Faith. I remember they did a version of Faith.
Faith was amazing. But that's why this song, Crack Addict, that was the theme tune of the pay-per-view, that's why that's so different to the kind of the other kind of almost cheesy stuff we heard from them before this. But I want to get the Limp Bizkit mention in there. One of my favorite bands in the whole world. WWE's favorite band in the whole world, as they announce when they come out on stage. And yeah, need to get this in there. Steven, I was supposed to be going to see Limp Bizkit in approximately, looking at my calendar, 3 weeks' time. They were supposed to be playing at the O2 Academy in Brixton in London on the 16th of April. The venue's been closed due to an incident at a gig that happened. They then moved the gig to the Monday instead of the Sunday. It's now at Alexandra Palace in London. And because it's a Monday, I now can't go. And I had to get my tickets refunded. And I bought them 2 years ago. It was one of those gigs that was postponed because of COVID and all these other various things. And my Limp Bizkit dream is over for another year. Hopefully I'll get to see them soon. But yeah, I can probably talk more about Limp Bizkit than I can about this match.
Yeah, I was going to say the highlight of the match is the Limp Bizkit entrance. There's not really much to... I mean, the one thing I could say, fair play to Nathan Jones, his spin kick to Big Show on the aisle looks really good.
Yeah.
And then he jumps in the ring. He jumps in the ring and he looks a bit lost. Like, what could I do? And the great thing, obviously, this pay-per-view was 20 years ago. So obviously on Twitter, you see all these videos of going 20 years, like 20 years ago, 20 years ago. And there's a couple ones I've seen pop up on Twitter recently leading up to some of the shows leading up to this WrestleMania. And there's one episode in SmackDown where Nathan Jones tries to hit the spin kick on Big Show and nearly falls on his arse. But they actually on the actual showing of SmackDown, they cut it out so that it looks like he's just hit the spin kick and the kind of camera kind of fixes it and kind of goes. But the actual proper record, they hits the spin kick and has to kind of adjust himself to fall on his ass. And I think that's the point that we're like, yeah, let's not go this one in. Pretty much, he gets kind of involved in the Survivor Series match later in the year because he's now a heel, but his career's just kind of goes nowhere.
He did better by the time we got to that Survivor Series match, I thought. And yeah,
do
you know what?
He was hidden a bit better. His weaknesses were hidden because he wasn't really in a high profile. You know,
that's what they did with Hulk Hogan. So, like, it's all about how they hide the weaknesses. But I feel I should point out that this match wasn't all bad. Like, I thought the A-Train looked amazing in this match. I think A-Train is also... Yeah, he's very hairy. But I think the A-Train is the highlight of Matt Bloom's career. I think it's better than Albert or Prince Albert or Lord Tensai. And I think his Baldo Bomb, which is now called the Derailer because he's called the A-Train, brilliant name, brilliant finisher. He also does a bicycle kick. I remember what you were saying about Here Comes the Pain. That was another good finisher I used to always use, the bicycle kick. And I thought generally looked okay. Big Show also hits a really good choke slam in this match where Undertaker's almost like bending fully backwards before he hits the mat. And did you notice, quite appropriate for wrestling at the moment, Undertaker at one point reverses like a Big Show choke slam into a Fujiwara armbar, which I think is MJF's finisher.
Yeah, it's one of the earliest examples I remember of Undertaker utilising some of the MMA stuff, which he would do quite frequently in the kind of 2007-2008 points when he was back to being the kind of proper Undertaker-style thing. Yeah. It was one of the first ones I've seen that, which was pretty good, you know. But it's not a match, really, that lives long in the memory. And, yeah.
Here's the thing. I want the outcome of this match changed for the record books. And allow me to tell you why. As A-Train and Big Show are walking to the ring, they announce that this match is now a handicap match. However, Nathan Jones comes in the ring and hits a spinning heel kick on Big Show and A-Train. Therefore, disqualification, Undertaker's streak is over. 10-1.
Yeah.
Get me WWE's rule book. Get me their customer services. I want this match outcome changed because Nathan Jones wasn't in the match and he interfered. So that means it's a disqualification.
Oh, could you imagine trying to get through WWE customer service? Oh, more chance of getting through to a blooming gas and electric company in the UK. Oh, God. So we move on from that one and we get our checks notes quickly. Only women's match of the evening. It's a triple threat match for the WWE Women's Championship. It's Victoria's defending her championship against Trish and Jazz. A triple threat match for that title for the second year in a row, I believe, because we had one at WrestleMania 18 where we've replaced Lita with Victoria. A lot of my notes are on this show have to do with theme music. No tattoo, devastated. What she got on the network. I loved Victoria coming out to all the things she said back in the day. An absolute banger of a song. Kind of WWE being in touch with modern hip stuff at that particular point in time. And Jazz. Jazz, if she wasn't the Kemar Roof of women's wrestling, would have been a fantastic asset for a lot of the women's division here, but she seemed to always be injured. She came back from an injury that she got just after WrestleMania 18 to kind of be put back in, because she never really got pinned to lose the title, if I remember rightly. Mm-hmm. I think it was a big multi-person match that she just kind of took out of, but yeah, she's an absolute powerhouse here.
Yeah, I loved this match, which never happens for women's matches, although I will say my the last two WrestleManias, both my favourite matches have been Bianca Belair's matches, but this women's match I thought worked so, so well. Jazz is absolutely amazing. She, as you were saying about entrance music, she has the worst sex jazz music that she comes out to. Victoria, no tattoo on the network, but it's tattoo-esque. There's tattoo-isms about it. And of course, Trish looks amazing. By this point, has learned how to wrestle pretty good as well. There's so many good moves in this match that I had to stop writing them down. Both Victoria and Jazz hit like flippy leg drops on Trish. They team up for like this double shoulder breaker thing, which looks absolutely brilliant on Trish as well. Victoria hits like a Michinoku driver on Trish, and JR is just kind of lost. He just goes, ah, that was a power bomb. there's like so many false finishes. There's so many like, right, these two are fighting, then these two are fighting, then the other two are fighting. Jazz hits a half Boston Crab on Trish, moves it into an STF, and then Stevie Richards, who just looks really happy to be here, at one point launches Jazz out of the ring, and that looks brilliant as well. The only downside of this match was Trish getting Victoria's bum out, which I can't tell if was like planned or not, but she goes to like roll her up and really pulls her trousers down. It looks a bit weird, but yeah, it's probably not aged very well. Jazz at one point plants Trish right on her face and then turns around to get a big massive forearm from Victoria. Victoria then misses a moonsault. Stevie Richards gets back involved with a chair, but he eats the Stratisfaction. And then Trish comes in, check kick on Victoria for the win and the belt. I genuinely thought this match was amazing. They just went 10 out of 10 for the whole match. And I like the kind of solid ending with Trish pinning Victoria as well, because Victoria was the champion. I'm not trying to be controversial. I think this was miles better than Becky, Charlotte and Ronda. Miles better.
Yeah, it is. I might not say miles better. I maybe say it's, I don't... Becky Charlotte Ronda doesn't age well after it, I don't think, which is a shame because I love Becky Lynch. But I love Trish Stratus as well, to be honest with you. Yeah, that's a decent, it's a solid match. It does the job very well. I actually think when Jazz hit the STF, my initial thought is, does everybody hit that move better than Cena? Everybody do that better. See, there's the man who used it for ever. See, the one WWE title matches at WrestleMania using it and can't hit it. There's another like big wrestler example hitting submissions that I'll talk about later on. I agree completely with Stevie Richards. His sell for the Stratisfaction is brilliant. He just, at this point, he's kind of, he just finished off maybe a year or so before Joanna Victoria did the Right to Censor stuff. It's just a complete flip-flop, this one. He's just like the guy with the crazy girlfriend.
Yeah.
Maybe a gimmick that doesn't age well, but the two of them were so good on TV together with it, you know.
Stevie Richards also didn't have a WrestleMania match. So this is quite a good... This is his, essentially, his WrestleMania moment.
WrestleMania 17, he's in the corner. He's not actually in the match for the Right to Censor match. So, yeah, it's weird, you know. He's wrestled at Bound for Glory, if I remember, but he's not wrestled at WrestleMania. Oh, yeah. And he did a lot of ECW matches, you know. He's a man of multi-talents, Stevie Richards, you know. Right to Censor, the BWO, so much great stuff in there. I liked it. I thought the triple threat, because Trish and Victoria had been going about as a feud for a while. Very enjoyable match at the Survivor Series 2002, the two of them had as well. This kind of concluded that feud, but it allowed Jazz to get in there because obviously she never lost the title, she never got pinned. So in theory, she should have been a great challenger going forward, but as I said, she kind of could never stay about for long enough. I think sometimes when you get an injury in WWE for a long time, it can be hard. A lot of people struggle to get back up to the same level or even the same booking. But Jazz was still wrestling like a couple of years ago, so she can still go.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, she's still, I've seen her knocking about. Was she not in Impact?
Impact, yeah, she was in Impact. I think she was a women's tag champ at one point. My Impact knowledge recently is very rusty, so I couldn't tell you exactly.
Can we take it down a notch from this amazing women's match, though, and talk about the promo moments before this from the other women who are on this card? Now, I've said...
let's go for it.
I've said lots of good things about this pay-per-view, but the absolute lowlight is the Miller Lite catfight girls hanging out with Tori and Stacey. Now, don't get me wrong, 20 years ago, I was 13 years old, I probably would have thought this was amazing. But, oh my God, I just wanted them off the TV. They were just bringing everything down. The best thing about it was JR saying there's a lot of pups in that dog pound.
I skipped the actual match I'm not gonna watch this.
Let's get the cat fight out the way early. They get given so much airtime. There's four cat fight girls segment in the whole show, by the fourth, they have this like cat fight on the stage. Stacey and Tori are involved. It goes on for fucking ages, and it ends with Tori pinning Coach.
It's the one of the Miller cat fight girls. The way she pronounced Hulk Hogan, Hulk Hogan,
Hulk, yeah, Hogan,
Hogan, yeah, Hulk exactly Hogan. Like, hey, get off my TV! Come on to hell! Oh, jeez, yeah, it's Coach. I mean. Come on. No wonder Coach hates WWE. Now.
Yep.
He got pinned off of... Well, to Stacey Keibler, day of recording, WWE Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Absolutely.
this is probably not part of our greatest hits.
No. But absolutely. We go from that to one of the best promo... In fact, I would think it was the best promo on this show from The Rock. What did you make of that?
Rock is just great when he does these backstage promos, especially Coach. The two of them just were like, you know, meat and potatoes.
Yeah.
They just would go on all the time. It's Hollywood Rock, I think, was a different level at points. It's a shame the Hollywood Rock gimmick was so short.
Yeah, it was.
I think if he had a longer run as that gimmick, I think it would be absolutely amazing. But he's only really in that gimmick for like 3 months.
Yeah, it was like the month before WrestleMania, or maybe 2 months before WrestleMania.
Yeah, it comes back for the Hogan rematch.
It's SummerSlam 2000, No, No Way Out, Survivor Series. No,
it was No Way Out the month before. It came back to do the Hogan win. Then he had This Way Austin. And he has the match with Goldberg.
And he's gone.
Backlash. And then he's gone. We don't see him again until WrestleMania 20.
Yeah.
Really, when he's doing the Rock and Sock reunion. And he's now a good guy again.
What I liked about this promo on the with Coach is it's exactly the same as his face promos. He just happens to throw in that he doesn't care about the people, and that's the only difference. He tells the truth in the whole thing. He's beating Stone Cold is the holy grail to him. And he's act one and act two don't matter. It's all about act three. Everyone remembers act three. He says it's the last chapter to the greatest rivalry this industry has ever seen. And I was yeah, you're right with all of this. I loved that promo. I thought he absolutely nailed it. Getting so hyped for the match. Something I discovered last night when I was writing some bits for this show. Did you know that this match between Austin and Rock, which we're still miles off of, by the way, I think it's four matches away, this was supposed to go on earlier in the card, but
Did they delay it because of the Austin stuff in the hospital?
Austin had drank too many energy drinks on either the night before or the night of the show, and so Vince wasn't sure about him going out and pushed the match to later on in the card. And I actually think that in the way that they did it ended up being I think the order of the card was pretty much perfect.
Yeah, it was fantastic stuff on that one. Yeah, I think it was the night before Ray Austin. He was in hospital the night before the show. Mm-hmm. They were concerned about his health and they didn't actually think he was going to make the match, so probably pushing it was good. And The Rock's third act comment in this promo is ironic, considering that he'll never be able to show off his third act Black Adam versus Superman fight on the big screen that he clearly wanted to do, because he wouldn't be the bad guy for Shazam. But hey-ho. I am not gonna talk DC politics. I'll talk Marvel politics. I will not talk DC politics.
I'm loving The Rock becoming a heel in real life. He's the sweetheart of the movie industry, and all of these people talking about him recently,
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Yeah, The Rock isn't that cool. He's done some kind of weird stuff. Fully on board with that. Entertaining, no end.
It's fantastic. It's absolutely great. We now go on to our next match. It's for the SmackDown Tag Team Championships. The champions at this particular point, making their WrestleMania debut, the world's greatest tag team, or as unknown at this point, Team Angle, Shelton Benjamin and Charlie Haas. They're taking on Los Guerreros, the previous champions, and the mesh together team of Rhino and Chris Benoit. It's great to see Eddie again. I can't remember the last time I watched an Eddie Guerrero match, even though he's not really getting the full showcase, as you would say, in this particular match. It's still great to see. He does a lot of things so smooth. I didn't appreciate Eddie Guerrero in 2003 when I first watched this, but watching it back, it's he's amazing.
Yeah, I love this. This was the sort of moment in the show where they got to do a bit of a tribute to the SmackDown 6. They had three of them in this match. Edge obviously out injured. Angle was headlining. And the other one was Rey Mysterio?
It was Rey Mysterio, yeah. I would guess Edge was going to be... I think that Edge would probably be the partner for Benoit.
Yeah.
Did it No Way Out because there was kind of the feud at that point.
So you can sort of see what this match probably was going to be before Edge had his injury. But yeah, I thought Eddie just elevates Chavo so much when they tag together. I thought they had great chemistry. I thought that Benoit and Rhino actually kind of worked. They were these guys that essentially didn't ever really speak, but they just kind of battered people. It was also funny that they're the two wrestlers that had also came back from broken necks. And then you've got Team Angle, who are in the stage prior to the world's greatest tag team. Great match. Steven, I have to bring this up. because ever since the New Day did it or tried to do it, I can't stop thinking about it. This is a triple threat tag team match, which means that any two men can be at the ring in the ring at the one time. Yeah. I don't understand why Charlie Haas and Shelton Benjamin don't just tag each other in and one pins each other and they retain the titles.
Yeah, because apparently wrestlers are stupid.
Yeah, like you know. Like I remember the New Day tried it for like two seconds in a match. Maybe I can't even remember when it was. It was years ago.
It was quite recent. It was fairly recent. I'm sure it was fairly recent. I think it was a Big E was a WWE champ.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But I loved this match. I know I'm repeating myself because I loved pretty much all the matches. I like that the crowd. There was two things I really liked about this match. One, I like that the crowd almost didn't know who to cheer for. You had two face teams, but then also you had Team Angle, who were just brilliant in the ring, and you had to almost respect them. And then Eddie, there's bits of it where Eddie's sort of playing the heel at points, which I thought was really good. And then the other thing that I really liked about this match is Michael Cole and Taz, they really talk about how much pressure is on Team Angle to like perform on such a huge stage. Like they're talking about how the guys have only been in the business, or not in the business, but in WWE for, you know, 2 months. They're already tag champs, and just how much pressure is on their shoulders to perform on a big stage. I really like that side of it.
Yeah. Taz is on good form in this match. He at one point says that Viva La Raza means frog splash.
Yeah, I really like that.
Frog splash. And I steal you. Yeah, it's crazy. I don't get it. Eddie does eventually hit a frog splash in this match, which is very well timed to actually break up a pin at one point in time. The timing of it is so well done. Because when you see a lot of these moves from the top rope, they kind of, you see them jump from like 10 minutes before the pin goes, but he kind of jumps really late. So it's very, very well executed. Who sells the gore better, Charlie Haas or Chavo Guerrero?
Yes, they both did quite well, I think.
Charlie Haas sells it like a boss. Absolutely. Yeah. Boss.
And this was the perfect finish, because it's like you've got Rhino, this absolute monster, still a monster at this point in the ring. The finish, he hits the gore on Charlie Haas and Chavo Guerrero. Eddie pulls Rhino out of the ring, and Benjamin steals the pin on Chavo. It's exactly how it would go. You almost have to get the other wrestlers distracted in order to win. So I thought it was a great finish, really quick-paced match, much like the opening match, and just great work from all the teams. There's nobody, with the exception of the catfight, there's nobody who's underperforming so far.
No, definitely. It's the highest rated from Mr. Meltzer at 3 stars. But I think that's... 3 stars is probably right. It's a nice wee... Nice getting our point in the match. As you mentioned, there's nothing really so far, maybe on the handicap match, maybe. But that's kind of... They were limited. The 3 guys, they were limited by what happened before. So, yeah, this is a nice way to get things going. Continue to keep things going. And it continues to get better. Because after this match, we're really spoiled still. Because this is a fantastic closing stretch on paper of WrestleMania. We've got a dream match, you know. A dream match then, a match that any time the two of them got together in the years that came after it continued to create magic. Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho. Fantastic story they told going into this one of Jericho idolising Shawn Michaels as a child. You know, that was who he modelled his career after. But now seeing it now, as a heel, he perfectly says, now I just want to be Chris Jericho, you know, which is Chris Jericho's current mantra. I just want to be Chris Jericho. Sorry, I think it done. But yeah, just a clinic these two put on. I mean, Shawn Michaels, give credit. Any guy who goes into something drawing blanks, you know, before he finally enters, to put on what he did, you know, I had to get that joke in. to go on and do what he did in this match is absolutely fantastic. It's hard to kind of put some words into it, but
yeah,
they are absolutely brilliant.
Yep, fantastic. They had a promo package for this match, even though I don't think that Chris Jericho versus Shawn Michaels needs any promo, but it almost had like the best build, because it was all about like, I wanted to be you and now I just want to be me. Y2J's entrance is still absolutely fantastic with the pyro and is having his back turned to the camera. Shawn Michaels comes down to the ring, he's got the streamer cannons, like three of them don't work and he shoots six of them. It was very like China at WrestleMania 17 with her like firework gun. It's Shawn Michaels' first. Is it Shawn Michaels' first Mania since 14? Is that how long it's been?
Yes, it's his first one since he lost the WWF title to Stone Cold 5 years prior.
Wow. That, it's just like that's a long time to have not wrestled. 5 years worth of Manias that he's missed. I love how on Shawn Michaels' entrance is so over the top, right? He's coming down. He looks ridiculous. Like he looks like a cowboy that's been shot with a color cannon. And he's coming down and he's firing the streamer cannons as he's going. His entrance is like 10 minutes long. And all the while, Chris Jericho is just in the ring, staring daggers at him. And it's like the look of disgust on his face. It's like he's saying to him, he's like, I should be you. He thinks himself, he's like, I'm better than you. This should be me that's doing that. And yeah, it was fantastic.
I love when the wrestlers do the kind of fake out in the ring. I know it's a hard one to compare because he was wearing a mask. But I love it at the WrestleMania 14 when Undertaker's got this big, amazing entrance with the Druids. The first time he does the real Druids entrance and it just panned to Kane's face. Kane's just, you know, obviously, yeah, he's wearing a mask. Underneath it, maybe giggling, fucking pissing himself laughing or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it just makes him look so stupid. Like he's like, I don't fear this. And that's kind of something similar with Jericho. It's like, yeah, I'm not gonna let you do that. And I think it's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Yeah, it was perfect. There's a couple of, before we got into the wrestling, there's a couple of calls that I wanted to point out that I thought you'd enjoy. The first one, JR says that Shawn Michaels is a first ballot Hall of Famer, if there is such a thing. And sure enough, I looked it up. First ballot Hall of Famer, obviously being a person who gets in the Hall of Fame at the first opportunity of asking. In the NFL, which I watch a lot of, it normally means 5 years after they've retired because that's the first time you can be eligible. Obviously, in WWE, not being a real sport, you can go in the Hall of Fame whenever. We have active wrestlers in the Hall of Fame. But yeah, sure enough, Shawn Michaels retired at WrestleMania 26 and was inducted into the Hall of Fame by WrestleMania 27. So he was a first ballot Hall of Famer.
There's not many they do that with. Flair was still technically wrestling when he went in. Mm. And obviously, there's Ray this year. So yeah. There's not really many else I could. Undertaker was a couple of years after as well. Yeah. So.
Edge, I think, went in. Wait, he yes. had his Mania match, yes. retired, and then Edge he did. Was in. Okay, another piece of commentary which I really enjoyed. JR says that Shawn Michaels won Match of the Year from 1993 to 1997. Now, Stephen, those dates aren't quite right, but we have to dive into this because this is one of the coolest things about Shawn Michaels. There was no Slammy Awards in 1993, so I don't know where he got that year from. But Shawn Michaels won Match of the Year at the 1994 Slammies for his match against Razor Ramon at WrestleMania 10, right? There was then no awards again in 1995. Don't know why that is. But he then won Match of the Year again in 1996 for his other Razor match at SummerSlam. He then won Match of the Year again in 1997 for his match against Bret Hart at WrestleMania 9, 10, 12, thanks. I was looking at my Roman numerals and I was like, XII. Right, so then we have a brief break where there's no Shawn Michaels, but there's also no Slammies. The Slammies don't return until 2008. He then won Match of the Year again in 2008 for his match against Ric Flair at Mania 24. He won it again in 2009, for the Undertaker match at Mania 25, and he won it again in 2010 for the Undertaker match at Mania 26, where he retired. There was no Shawn Michaels in 2011, so not only that, but there was no Match of the Year award at the Slammies in 2011. He couldn't win it because he wasn't actively a wrestler anymore, so they actually did away with the Match of the Year award. So all in all, he won Match of the Year 7 consecutive times over 16 years until he retired and the award was retired. I spent about 15 minutes looking all that up yesterday, and I just love it. That's
a fact and a half. The only one I could have told you was the 2009 one, because I only know that because they used it in the promo package for WrestleMania 26. That's how the feud restarted with The Undertaker. This whole thing with that one.
And it's not just WWE favoritism either. He won the PWI match of the year 11 times.
Oh, he won it. His Mania matches from like here to maybe like, not until he retired, most of his Mania matches in his second run got match of the year in PWI.
He won it 4 years in a row from 93 to 96, and then 7 years in a row from 2004 to 2010. They might as well have called it the Shawn Michaels Match of the Year Award.
Yeah, this is his only match in his second run that doesn't actually win that award, which is
wild,
quite crazy. But, we talk about Jericho a wee bit in this match as well. I mean, Jericho is on form here. He takes the mick out of bombing HBK throughout this full match. You know, my vivid memory of this match is just the wee dance he does before he hits his verse, the switch in music, just a wee shuffle with the feet.
Yeah,
it's like surely. See when he starts doing it, I always just think surely he's going to counter it, but no, that's nice and clean, beautiful kick, absolutely brilliant. Targets him outside the ring as well. I never understood why a submission outside the ring is apparently so much more painful than in the ring.
Yeah,
no, it's like they're still putting on the same thing. I don't know if it's something to do with the outside flooring and anything, but the wood's solid, the ring's solid, you know, so who absolutely knows on this one?
Maybe it's the fact that in the ring, you know, as an athlete, that all you have to do is get to the ropes to stop it. But when you're outside the ring, you have no means of stopping that move, so there's more pain on the wrestlers' faces.
Perhaps, but no, it's just a beautifully well structured match between two guys who have absolutely fantastic chemistry, and it kind of fits into the build of the whole match that Shawn Michaels doesn't win it particularly. Well, it's technically clean, but he doesn't win it through hitting sweet gym music, any of his big moves. He has to roll Jericho up to beat him, which kind of feeds into that whole thing of Jericho's thoughts of, I'm probably now better than the guy I idolized. So even though he doesn't beat him, he still has to kind of, he's had to kind of sneakily beat him as well, which is well done. And then Jericho just deserves an Oscar for his post-match stuff, you know?
Yeah. I loved it.
Oh, no.
I loved the finish. I loved how, so Jericho's like complaining to the ref after, I think Jericho has Michaels in the Walls of Jericho, but Michaels gets to the ropes. So Jericho's complaining to the ref, turns into one of the best sweet chin musics I've ever heard. The noise, the camera angle, everything about it is perfect. And then Chris Jericho kicks out it too. And that's wild. And then, of course, it finishes with the Shawn Michaels roll-up. And the crowd go absolutely apeshit when this match ends. JR's just given so much praise to both guys. And then the ending, as you say, Shawn Michaels puts his hand out to Jericho. Imagine this was how Chris Jericho turned face. Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho walk off into the sunset arm in arm as friends. But no, Chris Jericho pulls a Shinsuke Nakamura low blow to Shawn Michaels. Michaels just falls to the floor right in front of him. Jericho catches him. Oh, it's perfect. It just needs like sad music in the background or something like that. I'm not sure, right? But this might be my favorite match of both wrestlers. Obviously, Shawn Michaels had the matches with The Undertaker. He had the matches with Ric Flair. But I think in terms of like wrestling, this might be my favorite Jericho and favorite Shawn Michaels match.
Yeah, so there's a match a lot of people quote from the two of them. You know, they did a lot of great stuff in their feud in 2008. Mm-hmm. Yeah, 2008. I think it was 2008. But yeah, I think this match is just very well put together. Shawn Michaels does a lot of good stuff in his other matches. He's, you know, WrestleMania 25 Taker. But Jericho's still putting on good matches now, but I don't think he would get close to this stuff right now at this particular point in time. He's just been an absolute. He's such a good wrestler at this point. He holds that company together at points, you know. And yeah, a fantastic match, and it's a good placement as well, right in the middle of the card. Mm-hmm. The card then kind of takes a bit of a sour note afterwards, not for the actual match that we see. It's a match, it's, Chris, I think you'll fairly agree, it's quite infamous now in wrestling history. It's the one for the World Heavyweight Championship. It's Triple H defending against Booker T. With a build-up that I think if they did that in 2023, social media would absolutely crucify WWE, and rightly so, because it really did not help the build-up to what could have been a breakout night for Booker T.
Yeah, I actually had to go back and see if, like, because obviously, me watching it as a 13-year-old, I didn't know that there was racial overtones or racist overtones to this match between Triple H and Booker T. And it's actually quite apparent when you watch it back, even though I personally don't think Triple H was trying to say something racist. It's just the way that it's delivered that makes it sound that way. And, you know, me and you, Stephen, aren't ones to take a pure stance on this about whether someone is racist or not racist and what the intention was or something. But the line is, I actually had to go and write down the exact line. It was like, somebody like you doesn't get to be world champion. Now, earlier on in that promo, Triple H had gone on extensively about how this was to do with Booker T's criminal past, how Booker T was arrested when he was younger. And that's what he meant by someone like you. But even like there's other moments in this match where like it kind of bugs me that this is the booking. Like the King in this match, I think, is really questionable. There's a line where he says Booker T should have known he would never amount to anything when he was born on a pool table. And then JR's like, what are you talking about? How do you know that he was born on a pool table? And it's just like there's this like overtone of like lower class, like racial thing going on throughout the whole match. Thankfully, there's a bit of like lightheartedness to it. So I'm going to bring it all back by a classic Chris Murray deep dive on you. Jerry Lawler says on commentary, Stephen, one thing about Triple H, he's never been arrested. And I was like, I'm not sure about that. Like, and I was like, I bet you he's done something like, I bet you he's been caught speeding, or I bet you know you got caught with like weed or something, like, or you know, some drink driving, maybe had two beers and got caught drink driving in America somewhere. No, Stephen, it's not that at all. I implore you to go back to the 31st of August 2000 episode of SmackDown when during the show Triple H is arrested for spousal abuse after Kurt Angle reported him to the police. It's not even 3 years before this when Jerry Lawler says he's never been arrested. And just to make matters even worse, who was on commentary when Triple H got arrested? It was Michael Cole and Jerry the King Lawler. He was there and he didn't even remember that Triple H got arrested. So, Jerry, you're a liar. Don't lie to us.
I mean, the Triple H character in the years prior to this didn't have a squeaky clean record. I mean,
he
drugged a woman and married her and simulated having sex with a mannequin in a casket. So
how are none of these things arrest worthy?
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18+ terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
I mean, the first one, yes. The second one's maybe a bit sick. I don't know if it's my legal definitions of the second one, I'm not 100% sure. Take those overtones out of it. The match is okay. It's not a bad match at all. It's just kind of, when you watch it back and you know that's kind of that history. The two things that stood out to me remembering this match is that and the finish. So going back and watching it, I kind of maybe like, I know this is coming. And I'm not really feeling it because of that. But if I kind of took that in isolation, it's not a particularly bad match at all. Booker T showcases why he's so good. Booker T is older than Triple H, which I didn't actually realise. Booker T is actually, I think, Booker T's 58 now, which meant he was 38 then. Triple H is 53 now. So it's a 5-year difference between the two of them. You thought Booker T was the up and comer. The other thing really stands out to me.
Also, how depressing is it that at this wrestling pay-per-view, Triple H, the World Heavyweight Champion, was the same age as us?
Oh, don't get me started. don't get me started. And also, I always remember Booker T's spinning leg drop off the top rope. Very well executed.
It was called, in WCW, it was called the Harlem Hangover. And then by the time it came to WWE, I remember from SmackDown, Shut Your Mouth, it was called the Houston Hangover, because I think he is actually from Houston, but he was billed from Harlem in WCW. Looked amazing, and it was another like go-to create a wrestler finishing move that I would use.
Yeah, and an Indian deathlock.
Yeah,
Don't see that Indian deathlock.
Yeah, I have never seen this move before or since. JR on commentary said he hadn't seen it in about 10 years. I couldn't tell. Was it like, is it like a sideways figure four leg lock?
I think so. It's a hard one to kind of try and demonstrate because I don't really know what I'm doing. It's the fact he pushes the knee, and anybody knows if you kind of put that much pressure on the knee, it'll hurt. So yeah, it looks sore. I think this match would have been rated higher if it wasn't for that finish. The finish is a bit of a dud,
isn't it? Because I think Booker T like can't stand up because of the Indian deathlock, so he can't hit the axe kick. Instead, Triple H hits like a kind of desperation pedigree, would you say? And that gets a kind of dud of a three count.
It's the type of wins that you see that when they eventually get the cover, the face always tends to get out just before three. And it lifts the crowd a wee bit when you kind of get that. But it was kind of just like, one, two, three. Oh, it's done. You know, it's like, really? I mean, Booker T had hit an axe kick about 2 minutes earlier. He'd hit that, the Harlem Hangover as well. I mean, they kind of say like, oh, it's kind of aggravated what he's got. But it's kind of like, and he kind of takes the pedigree really easily.
Yeah.
It's, I would have, like, I don't know. I would like to have seen Goldust involved here.
Same with like Flair was there, but he wasn't, you know, majorly involved in the match. I thought the crowd were quite mild for the end result, much like Rey Mysterio opening the card. I was really surprised at this outcome. I really thought that Booker T, like as a fan going into this pay-per-view, I really thought that Booker T was going to win. Obviously, like the reason he got this match was because he eliminated The Rock in a battle royal to win it. To face Triple H at WrestleMania, and then the build, you know, he beats him on the Raw before, I think it's the Raw before Mania.
Yeah, the week before.
In the tag match with Goldust against Triple H and Ric Flair, and I was convinced, but of course the match went to Triple H. I actually was bothered enough by this to go and find out why this happened, and I have a quote for you from WWE head writer Brian Gewirtz. G-E-W-I-R-T-Z, Gewirtz. He said this in August 2022. He said, I think that the mindset at the time was that the match was third or fourth last on the card, and the moment would be lost in the show if we pulled the trigger and named a new champion. I'm not saying that was the smartest decision or one that I was in agreement with, but that was the mindset. So he sort of made out like they didn't want to do a big world title win halfway through the card. So in a two-night WrestleMania era, if Booker T had held on for another 20 years, he maybe could have main-evented the first night of a WrestleMania and won the title then.
Well, it wasn't the Rumble, so who knows? who knows? I mean, what you said, the crowd maybe don't feel as up for this match. I can tell you something, they feel up for the next match.
Yes.
That kind of comes on the card. 20 years in the making. Hulk Hogan versus Vince McMahon. I have shades of WrestleMania 17 with Vince and Shane in parts of this match. I don't think it's as good, but I think in parts of this match it's got the same sort of feel to it, these two, because it's far from a classic. Mm-hmm. But it's the storytelling on it. And as I've mentioned, the crowd are into it. So if the crowd are into it, you know, that's kind of the main thing. I mean, Rock Hogan the year before, many people say that's not a classic when you watch it isolated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like I'm a broken record at this point. This match was fantastic, even though the wrestling wasn't great. I thought the promo was fantastic. Hogan testifying against Vince in the steroid trial, back and forth over who created WrestleMania, who created Hulkamania. What was the low point in this match for me was the entrance. WWE Network, they did them dirty. They do Hogan. Not have Jimi Hendrix, Voodoo Child, on Hulk Hogan's entrance. But thankfully, what did I do? I paused the WWE Network and I went away. I went on Daily Motion, and I implore you, if you are listening along with us right now, to stop this podcast. Go on to Daily Motion, search Hulk Hogan versus Vince McMahon entrance, and watch this with its full performance. Hogan is literally singing along with every word of Voodoo Child, and yet they don't have the music on the WWE entrance. It's me personally, it's my favorite entrance song. I think it just, Hogan makes it look fantastic. He's been using this since WCW. It's legitimately one of my favorite songs ever as well. So just brilliant. We get a really wide panning shot of the crowd. They're going mental. There's legitimately a million signs and the audience for this entrance. People are so up for it. The only thing that I noticed is he grabs a poster from a fan that says Vince still sucks, and then he rips it in half. And I was like, it kind of looks like you're defending Vince by saying no, he doesn't suck, by ripping up the poster.
He's not the world's most intelligent man, is Mr. Hogan. I think he's proved that over his time. Vince McMahon. Obviously, we're doing this podcast in 2023, and Vince McMahon has not had a good 18 months. But I take this in isolation in 2003. Vince more than plays his part from a wrestling point of view here. Takes a blade job that Eddie Guerrero would be proud of.
Mm-hmm.
Is absolutely spewing from the head at one point. You actually think you see the blood gushing from it. The only person that takes a better, funnier blade job in this whole thing is pure Hugo on the Spanish commentary table, whose blade job looks like it's just isolated to the center of the head.
It was so weird. Why did they include this? Why? Like, Hogan misses Vince and hits Hugo with a chair, and then Hugo's bleeding. It's almost like he had somewhere to be later that night, so they had to write him out of the rest of the show or something.
That's the fact that he's down, he's absolutely done, and then the medical team are taking him away, and I think it's Jerry Lawler. Is it somebody on, was it Taz on comp? Taz on SmackDown match. It's like, why are they taking him away? Vince is the one hurt.
Yeah, that's true.
Because Taz, he's still got a match to kind of win here, you know. Now, Chris, I completely lapsed and forgot that Roddy Piper shows up in this match.
Yeah.
I completely lapsed, and the minute he shows up, I'm like, oh, fuck, Roddy Piper's in this.
Not only did I forget...
It's just so random.
Not only did I forget, but I actually forgot what he did. He of course, is standing between the employer that he's hated since he left the WWF and went to WCW. He's standing between Vince McMahon and his immortal enemy that he's had since before WrestleMania 1. Like, it's this perfect moment of like the internal struggle of who he wants to hit with this lead pipe, and then he hits Hogan. Oh my God, the place goes absolutely apeshit. It's just brilliant. The only thing that could have made it better is if they'd had his entrance music, but then it wouldn't have been as like quick, because I think he just jumps in the ring, takes off a hoodie or something, and he's there. Looks fantastic. Just, oh, such a good cameo. Loved it.
I mean, it's no Linda McMahon getting out of the wheelchair.
No, come on now.
It's a peak match at this particular point in time. It's just, it does the job. It's storytelling. It's technically long-term storytelling, but I'm not going to go into that one. There's a lot of, I'd say, really rememberable moments from it. The point where Vince takes the pipe out from under the ring and his face creeps up. is very iconic. Stephanie does a version of it in a match. Is it the Ronda match? She does it in a match. I can't remember when she does it. But she does a bit where she kind of imitates it in a match years down the line. I can't remember exactly what it is. But yeah, this is just if you tell people, give me a peak WWE sports entertainment match, it's there. It's a three-star match. It's not going to be flippy stuff in that. But it's a perfect tonic, especially after the match that came before. It gets the crowd back off up on their feet.
Exactly.
Which is what you really need.
As I said earlier, I think the pacing of this and the order of these matches is practically perfect. The finish of this match, I was like jumping out my seat with excitement. Piper, we get Vince going for he hits him with the pipe first of all, and then he goes for the Hogan leg drop. Vince goes for the cover with Sylvain Grenier in the ring as the referee. You think, oh my god, it's over. Two count, and Hogan hulks up. And I've never, you've seen the Hulk up a million times, but I was so on board with this one. It was like when he did it versus The Rock the year before. It was just brilliant. And then Hogan runs wild. Triple leg drop on Vince. Absolutely phenomenal. Three count. The second this match ended, paused it, back to Daily Motion. Get the proper ending with Jimi Hendrix in the background. And, oh my God, I absolutely loved this match. I think it might have been my favourite match of the night. I can't decide. There's just too many good ones.
Yes,
right. So I want to ask you this: what was the deal with Shane? Did this lead to anything later?
Oh, I can't remember. I honestly can't remember what happened to Shane. I was quite confused remembering about it. I just kind of had a bit of a laugh while Hogan's leaving. Vince just in a pool of blood in the middle of the ring, like,
yeah, with his middle fingers up.
fingers up defiantly, like you may have beaten me, because the whole. I think the whole storyline continues because Hogan does the Mr. America thing.
Yeah, that's right after this, yeah.
Yeah, that's still with Vince, and he's kind of... Vince has a really creepy 2003 as well. He has the feud with Zach Gowen.
Yep,
and he has that match with Steph.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's not talk about that. Let's actually now go on to a Raw main event, main event, one we touched upon earlier on. It's the finale of the trilogy. It's Chris is showing off his WrestleMania 17 t-shirt there. It's Rock Hogan 3. Rock Austin 3. Rock Hogan 3 never happened.
Ah, if only.
Stone Cold versus The Rock. The third match in their trilogy. Obviously, they fought at WrestleMania 15, WrestleMania 17, and now WrestleMania 19. With the build-up of this one being that Rock has done it all, but he's never beaten Stone Cold Steve Austin at WrestleMania. A match we talked about briefly earlier on was in doubt 24 hours before that, as Austin had to be hospitalised overnight. Made this match, but it would prove to be his final match, what we thought would be his final match ever, until WrestleMania last year when he came out of retirement to have that match with Kevin Owens on main event of night one, WrestleMania 38. This is his last proper wrestling match, because that match with KO is a false count anywhere, no holds barred match. It's not a proper wrestling match. This is his actual wrestling done. And yeah, you can kind of, in hindsight, you can kind of see in his face the emotion when he's coming out, Austin, because you get a brief look at him and he's like, he kind of knows this is my last hurrah. Mm-hmm. I'm going to go out, I'm going to put on a show. And if there's a better dance partner, him and The Rock, just pillars of that generation.
Yeah, and we had a little hint of it, didn't we? Because on his jacket it says, is it OMS? Or I can't remember what the acronym is, but it's like essentially the acronym stood for One Last Match.
Yeah.
But it wasn't OLM. I can't remember what it was exactly. I didn't write it down, but as soon as I saw the initials on his jacket, I was like, oh yeah, he told us in the entrance. But yeah, they work so well together, Stephen. It's the third time they've done this at the top of a card of WrestleMania, and yet it's still just as good. Of course, the place just goes absolutely mental for Stone Cold's entrance. The Rock has his awful Hollywood version of his entrance theme, which I just didn't enjoy, but I was like, yeah, I'm supposed to hate it. He's supposed to have like almost butchered his theme. I like this line, right? The King says, "Do you think Austin is jealous of The Rock being a movie star?" And actually, I had to think. I was like, well, there's definitely an argument to be made there, because of course, Stone Cold was the top guy in the company. You know, 97, 98, 99, and around that time, The Rock almost sort of came out of nowhere to really be the face of the company, and then used the WWF and the WWE as his launching pad into his movie career, which still goes on to this day. Austin, on the other hand, you know, he did The Rundown, he did that weird film with Vinnie Jones where they were on an island, but he's never really had a pure...
Yeah, The Condemned, which
The Condemned.
I was watching it. I watch a YouTube series of a guy who analyzes movies and stuff like that, and TV shows and that. And part of the show he does is the top streamed TVs and movie shows in the US. Mm-hmm. And number 10 that 2 weeks ago was The Condemned.
Really?
and he's little like that. That's a film starring Stone Cold Steve Austin.
But do you think that? Do you think that Austin has any, you know, bitterness towards The Rock? Not bitterness,
no,
but do you ever think he sees him and thinks, oh, that should have been me. I should have been the big movie star.
Oh, I think he's quite happy with his life. He's got his ranch. He's got his beers. he does all his stuff, you know.
He's got a podcast.
He talks about, you watch yourself into a shoot. So what do you do? You know, it's just like, oh, some of his quotes. I think he does on purpose, some of the stuff.
Awesome. Yeah, oh, totally, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, this was what I was referring to earlier on with a top wrestler who does a submission move badly. The Rock's sharpshooter is the worst sharpshooter ever. It's so bad. But he keeps doing it time and time and time again. He's literally holding him to the ankles. It's like, come on, if you're going to do it, Rock, stretch and do it. Get in about it. But I got to give him credit. He wrestles for a good 5-10 minutes with that vest on that you mentioned. Unfathomed, you know, it doesn't affect him at all, just keeps going about it. Then eventually he gets the jacket off and then he just starts kicking up a gear, because in the opening exchanges, Austin's dominating the match. Then eventually Rock gets in to start targeting, but he's still having a bit of fun. He's, you know, he's doing the vest and everything. And then the longer it gets on, the match goes on, you feel the... What I love about it is, I think wrestlers should do it more often, even the kind of comedy guys. You feel them up in it. And eventually, towards the kind of stretch, you can see in his eyes this how serious he is about this. He's like, "I'm going to do this because if I keep asking about, he's going to eventually get me." Mm-hmm. Because that was just after the point where they were literally doing, you know, finisher steals.
Yeah, Austin hits the Rock Bottom, 2 count. Rock hits the Stunner, 2 count. Austin hits the Stunner, 2 count. Rock hits People's Elbow, 2 count. So as you say, it's straight after that you can see in Rock's eyes, he's just like, "I need to end this right now."
Mm-hmm. And then he literally takes it up. He hits him, but it's 3 Rock Bottoms he hits.
Yeah, 3 Rock Bottoms, and especially the last one. Go away and watch the last one and listen to the noise. It's right in the middle of the ring, and I think it sounds like a gunshot going off. And it's like, it's as if he put those 2 WrestleMania losses into that final Rock Bottom to end that match. It was brilliant.
The way the kind of his closing's ended is what kind of you feel like it should have happened with the Triple H Booker T ending to the match, because Austin's, they create the doubt that they do with Austin's kicking out of the Rock Bottoms, and when the third one gets hit, you still get that feeling that, oh, he's still going to do it, or that he's at least going to get out of it, but it's literally the physical exhaustion of it. He's absolutely drained.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18+.
And yeah, it's just a very well-told culmination to the match and the feud. And I still think it stands out as the best of the 3. I'll hold my hands up and say it. I struggled to watch the WrestleMania 17 match because I got upset as a child with the heel turn of Austin. So even to this day, I just watch it going, no, kind of, it's hard. It's a hard one to watch. But this match is brilliant.
I think you've got an argument there because, like, you know, the first one is like the cheesiest of the bunch because
No one thinks the first one's the best.
The Rock's in his like silly heel phase, so it's like obviously Austin was going to win. And then the second one, the ending's a bit ridiculous with the like 25 chair shots and then just the pin with Vince in the ring, and then it's like 1, 2, 3, it's over. And then with people cheering Austin even though he's a heel, that one's a bit messy. Whereas this one's like the complete match to end the trilogy. I thought that was very, very good. And I also think that with Austin winning two of them, and then The Rock winning the third, they sort of come out as equals almost, which they are. And what do you think about the words that The Rock said to Austin after the match? Have you read this?
Oh, I've heard about it. I know he kind of thanked him for something.
Yeah, so he pins him, and then there's like a very, like, you know, it's about 30 seconds. There's a point where The Rock has his back to the hard cam, and he's facing Austin, who's still lying on the ground, and he says something to him. And so I went away and looked up the words, and he says, I thank you so much for everything that you've done for me. I love you. Austin says, I love you too. Rock then sorts of like hits him on the chest, and he leaves the ring. And that's what I liked about this as well, is even though The Rock won, he got up the ramp quickly, and he left Austin to that moment, because I think The Rock definitely knew before the match that this was Austin's, you know, curtain call almost.
I think they probably knew a few weeks before he was going to finish. This was going to be it for him, his final match. I think they had some sort of incline. I think with the neck injuries, they kind of know. Edge has talked about it with his retirement, when he had to go, that he kind of had a feeling the way it was going, the way he was feeling. Mm-hmm. He was going to be finished with it. So, yeah, he went out there, did the job. Austin, given how old school he talks about being on his podcast, that's the thing you do. You go out on your back.
Yeah, and, you know, exactly. The only one that... Arna, was it? Yeah, this was it. The only one that always bugs me. Drew McIntyre leaving ICW. I think about it all the time. He had a match with Jack Jester. It was at Baromania. It was a barbed wire ropes match. And Drew won. I was like, go out on your back. That's what you're supposed to do in wrestling. I don't
think that was Drew's call. I think they made the step for that match before he actually signed with WWE. And I think I don't think WWE would have liked the idea of, yeah, he's going to get absolutely battered by barbed wire. Because he takes no bumps. Jester takes every barbed wire bump in that match.
Yeah.
And Drew gets nothing from it. So, yeah, I don't think that was Drew's call. I did not think that was Drew's call. right, main event time.
Right.
We've got to the final match of this show.
Steven.
Sorry.
It's time for a game. Because just before we get to the main event, I thought, I'm going to do this. I'm not going to tell you about it in advance, but I want to play a game with you before we hit the main event. WrestleMania 19 is probably my favorite pay-per-view for one thing, and one thing specifically, and that is it has some of the best crowd posters that have ever existed in the history of wrestling. Because obviously the art of a poster at a wrestling show, you know, it dies out a bit after the Attitude Era. And 2003 is very much, you know, the Attitude Era is done. We're into like ruthless aggression. This is on its way out. So I have written an A4 page of the best posters from this show. I'm going to read you them, and I would like you at the end to tell me what your favorite is.
Go for it.
Okay, so start from the very top of the crowd. I didn't actually see any good ones during Rey Mysterio, Matt Hardy, because it was too quick a match. But if we start from Undertaker's match, we have Wayne Aruni. Which is really good, if you think about it. Wayne Aruni. He would have been quite popular in 2003.
Yeah, he was just starting out at that point.
Another one that popped up through the whole show. You Are Butt.
I had that down my notes.
there's a good one. Cheese-eating surrender monkeys. which is a line from The Simpsons, which is when Willie's teaching French. Yep. During the women's title match, do you like ass? There's also a massive sign on the hard cam that's blurred out during the women's title, and I wanted to go and watch it on some like terrible website to see if it maybe wasn't blurred, but I didn't bother. During the tag titles match, it just says lots of people suck, as if to say it's not just Kurt Angle. There's loads during Chris Jericho, Shawn Michaels. Some quite good one-liners here. One says, "I know a sexier boy." We miss Bret Hart. There's loads of right. Let's just dumb it down a little bit. There's loads of Iraq War ones. Sadly, the Iraq War started 10 days before WrestleMania, so it was right in people's minds in America. I know that at one point, I think there's a promo right at the start of the show where JR says, like, we know you guys are watching us out there. Let's get the job done early. Let's get you all home. Yeah. And I was watching it knowing that the war went on for 8 years. That made me really depressed. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. We're only here for happy posters. There's one that just says, "We support USA and its troops." That's nice. Nice patriotism. Fozzie sucks. there's also one that just says, well, I didn't really get a good look at it, but it looks like it says T-hee, like T-E-E-H-E-E, yeah. And then Cena. And I was like, what? He was still in OVW at this time. And then I looked up and he wasn't. He'd been on the main roster for a bit.
He'd been on the main roster for 6 months.
Maybe. 6 months or so by that point. There was also a kind of Seth Rollins looking one. It looked like two egg timers that were next to each other and they had the line through
Sean
the middle.
Sean O'Hare.
Oh, is that what that was?
I think it was a Sean O'Hare one, maybe.
Right, that'll be it, right. Okay, this one took up a good 15 minutes of my night. PWF sucks. Now, it took me a long time to figure this out. PWF is the Pacific Wrestling Federation. It's not the one that made the PWF Heavyweight Championship, which became the Triple Crown in All Japan. It's not that one. This is one that came out of Tacoma in Washington, which obviously is nearby Seattle, Washington. I went through every show they've ever done from 2001 till 2004, and there was no notable wrestlers. So I guess they did suck. I was hoping maybe, you know, you get a random one where like Golga turned up for a match or something like that. But nope, there was nobody good. PWF does officially suck. Right, okay, a few more. During the cat fight, there was one that just said Pound Saddam. Appropriate. During the World Championship match, we had Camera Guy Dudley, which is a good reference. Back to what you were saying at the very top of the show, this poster now makes more sense when I find out that Safeco Field's the home of Microsoft. There's one that says McMahon fears Bill Gates. Two good ones back to back. I'm drunk. Where are my pants? Goldberg sucks. I like that because he doesn't debut till the night after, so those people obviously read the dirt sheets. Teabag Saddam. F5, Brock sunk my battleship. Right. During the street fight, I stared at this for ages. I tried to get it on three different camera angles before I could work it out. It just says, Hulk Hogan, sucked in the 80s, sucked in the 90s, sucks now. Vince McMahon is better than you. Hulkamania dies tonight. 20 years in the faking. There's one on the entrance ramp during Hogan's entrance that says, being gay is cool. Stone Cold said so. Two more. Hulkamania, January 23, 1984 to March 30th, 2003. Cause of death, McMahon-a-mania. It was like four or five McMahon signs. And the last one, I wrote down during Austin versus Rock, Goldberg fears goldfish. And that is your posters for WrestleMania 19. What's your favourite?
I love F5, suck my battleship.
F5, suck my battleship. It's just so random. Like, I have to hand it to the fans of wrestling in 2003. They absolutely nailed these posters. I don't think I'll ever get as good a deep dive of posters than I got for this pay-per-view.
I mean, the Vince McMahon is better than you is ahead of its time because Dodgeball's not out for another year.
True, very true. Oh, what a film, Dodgeball. But yes, we can now go on to
the...
To the main event. I've given you my poster section.
Okay, main event is Kurt Angle defending his WWE title against Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar winning the Royal Rumble, looking to avenge the title that he lost at Survivor Series last year. Kurt Angle won the title at Armageddon a month after that, after he said he was going to help Brock and then turned heel and joined Heyman. And Big Show, I think, still.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Yeah, and that led to the whole Team Angle thing and Brock being the challenger here. My first note really here is Michael Cole's had a rough night because throughout this match, he's very croaky. The number one contender.
Yeah, it bugs me because... They're not on the whole show, so their throats shouldn't be destroyed. But yeah, by the main event, Michael Cole's voice was absolutely wrecked.
He's absolutely wrecked, but Taz is still on it. Taz is the best at introducing Brock Lesnar at this point. So good.
In preparation for this recording that I've done with you, I actually went away and listened to the WrestleMania 19 episode of the Kurt Angle Show podcast that he does with Conrad Thompson. So it's 90 minutes long. I didn't finish it. I listened to about 40 minutes of it. Kurt Angle said that this was the biggest match of his career. He said that Paul Heyman was instrumental in putting everything together because obviously he had a backstage role as well as his on-screen role. He also said that Vince came to him one day after they'd done all the kind of comedy stuff of, late 2001 with Stone Cold. After he'd done that, and he was like, you have to be heel. And you have to be more serious. And that's where the kind of wrestling machine version of Kurt Angle came about. He also said that Vince was the one that wanted to put Brock and Angle together in a match. And he said that Angle in the podcast said he knew that they were going to be headlining Mania since before the Royal Rumble. So the build for this was quite meticulously planned out. And of course, as well as that, The history of Angle and Brock's quite interesting. They sort of started out as kind of almost like a friendly rivalry in real life. Lesnar was asked in an interview, who do you think would win in a shoot wrestling match between you and Kurt Angle? And Brock was like, well, it'd be me, obviously. I'm way bigger than him. He wouldn't be able to compete with my size. So Angle went up to him in the locker room one day and he goes, oh, I heard you said you could beat me in an amateur wrestling match. Let's do it right now. And Brock's like, no. Like, we don't need to do that. He's like, I'm not dressed for it. I've not got any shoes on. He's like, cool, do it barefoot. We'll do it right now. And Brock's like, no. I don't want to do it. And Angle, obviously, he doesn't go mental, but he just says, right, just watch what you say in future, okay? And this ends up them becoming, like, best mates. So all through this period, 2003, Angle, Lesnar, and Big Show are road buddies. They become like really good mates in the run up to this match, and the only reason that they stop becoming road buddies is because Kurt Angle's neck explodes.
I vividly remember there's the two Brock and Angle in the summer of 2003 just sitting backstage drinking milk.
Yeah,
casual as you like, but yeah, this is a clinic. This is obviously two guys, amateur wrestling background, know what they're doing. So much chain wrestling going on in the very early stages of the match, just counter for counter type aspect from it. 20 years on, seeing what he's like now, it's crazy seeing Brock fight from beneath.
Yeah.
Because so much of this match is Angle. Angle just does him in for the full match. Brock is having to come out from, you know, German suplexes. Kurt Angle's just technically outclassing him. You know, Brock, we know he's a seller, Brock, and Brock tends to sell from these kind of shock, currently anyway, a lot of the guys, maybe not Lashley, the recent stuff, but a lot of the stuff he did with the likes of some of the stuff with Reigns, stuff
even
like Daniel Orton, Bryan, AJ Styles.
Yeah, there's never any real selling from Brock. This is something he did back then, he doesn't really do now.
Yeah, all he's selling is usually just if somebody kind of comes at him from surprise, he'll kind of stagger about a bit. I mean, Drew, that's the one. Drew at the Rumble in 2020. He sells that like a beast. But yeah, it's just the count. Some of the counters and the transitions in this match are absolutely fantastic. It's so enthralling to watch. It makes you think anytime they go for some big move, you don't know if it's going to actually come to anything. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think there's Brock hits three F5s in the end. I think Angle hits one Angle Slam. But for the majority, up until the second F5, anytime they went for the moves, you thought they're going to get out of it. I mean, Angle's counter from the F5 into the ankle lock is so perfectly tight and well done.
It's picture perfect. It's so, so good. And also, it just completely changes the direction of the match at the time. Like Brock is on top for a bit and goes for the F5, and then it's like, boom, switch mid-air into the ankle lock. Just like, oh man, it's so well done. And as you say, like, you were never convinced at any point that one guy was going to absolutely batter the other guy. Like, Michael Cole, I'm not sure this is actually true, but he does say on commentary that Angle hits the Angle Slam, Brock kicks out, and Cole goes, that's the first time anyone's kicked out of the Angle Slam. And then 2 minutes later, the first F5, and Angle kicks out. And that's the first time anyone's kicked out of the F5. And I was just like, that's great. If anyone was going to do that for each of these wrestlers, it would be each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's just some of the stuff. Some of the ones are great. I mean, the Angle's released German to Brock.
Mm-hmm.
No one would hit that move to Brock these days. Absolutely not. Brock just flies.
Yeah, Brock flips a full 180 degrees. Like,
yeah.
Or no, more than that, 270 degrees, because he goes from standing to on his face. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's great. It's just a complete, you know, obviously a much different build at that point, Lesnar. But yeah, it's unbelievable. We have to talk about it, because we did briefly talk about it earlier on. The Shooting Star Press from Brock Lesnar. Now, the thing about it is, in the years since then, there's videos that have came out, Brock hitting this in dark matches, hitting it in OVW. So he could do it. And he could do it very well.
Mm.
But he's got two issues with this one. One, Angle's about half a mile away at the point. So that's given him an obstacle right away. And then there's the obvious thing that he kind of under-rotates. Because I think he's maybe trying to push himself a bit too much to kind of get to Angle. And then that's the point. And his head. It's not the fact that his head just hits directly downwards. I think he hits Angle in the ribcage.
Mm.
Which makes it so much worse. And Angle's a pro. Angle helps him through the kind of closing couple of minutes. Because you could tell looking back that that was going to be the finish. Hits the F5. Hits that big move. And the crowd goes mental.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, they kind of have to improvise it a wee bit, because yeah, that was nasty.
This is an honest to God story, right? I don't know if you did this when you were younger, but I spent a lot of my childhood, I'd say late 90s, early noughties, don't remember exactly when it was, but we used to just sit on Kazaa or LimeWire and we'd download random videos of wrestling. We just, you know, search engine, you put in Brock Lesnar and it comes up like random stuff that you'd never seen before. It's almost like tape trading, but it's just random videos, right? I vividly remember being very young and one of my mates being like, oh, look at this video I found. It's Brock Lesnar doing a Shooting Star Press. And I think it was in OVW, because I remember it was like yellow. And I remember being like, that was absolutely amazing. Like, and he hits it perfectly, three count and all that. See, on that night in March 2003, I was watching this that Monday night after WrestleMania happened. I remember he hits that F5 and he sits back in the corner. And I was watching on my own. I wasn't watching with my mates or anything. And when he sits back in the corner and you see him like turn round to his right and look up at the ring post, I was like, he's going to do a Shooting Star Press. And I wish anyone could have been there to verify that I had this thought, because I knew it was going to happen 2 seconds before it did, because I'd watched these videos on Kazaa of him doing it. And yeah, you're right. Like, it's almost if though, see if he hadn't hit Angle's ribcage, he might have hurt himself even more, because he comes down it like a torpedo, almost straight first, head first into the mat. I think I remember reading somewhere that because he's so muscly, because his back and his neck are so muscly, that's what stopped his neck breaking. And I can fully believe that because, you know, he completely spikes himself, and anyone smaller probably would have just snapped in half.
Oh, God. There's an irony to the fact that coming out of this match is Angle, who has a broken neck.
Yeah, exactly. They were both absolutely battered.
But Brock comes out and he's, you know, the head attraction for SmackDown for the full year.
Mm.
Pretty much for the rest of his run, which is mental. He obviously gets the win. Eventually, Angle just kind of dragged himself over to their pin, kind of helps him up, and Brock gets himself together, hits the pin, then sits in the corner and thinks it's 1991. he's that dazed. It's unbelievable how dazed he looks. But yeah, it's a 4.25 star match. Very a good rating for Meltzer to a WWE match. A really top main event for WrestleMania. Mm. It's not like on paper going into it, it was not like the star attraction match from an outsider point of view. I mean, this pay-per-view does 560,000 buys, which is down 300,000 the year before. But I think a lot of that was on Rock and Hogan. It doesn't really, other than maybe Rock, Austin, and Hogan McMahon. I'm like Michael Cole at the end of this WrestleMania. This is not like the same star attraction match, but the two of them go out, deliver, they wrestle. And, you know, that's what you want to see. So something's absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, really enjoyed it. The weird thing is, this is probably like one of my least favorite matches on this card because, you know, the crowd were just slightly less mental, but it's still like, for me, it's like still up there about an 8 or 9 out of 10 this match. That just shows you how big the standard or how high the standard was for this whole pay-per-view. And I loved how after the match, you know, there's a bit of a moment where, you know, Brock still got the little Tweety Bird spinning around his head like in Looney Tunes, and they have a handshake, and I really liked that. It just felt like a moment in time. Like these were, you know, not conventional WrestleMania headliners. They're not, you know, big over the top characters like Hogan and Rock. They're not the kind of guy, the flashy guys like Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels. Like they're not like John Cena. That it's like different. These two, it was almost like these two headlined WrestleMania because they are the best wrestlers. Like I think JR says at the top of the match, he says these are the two greatest athletes to ever grace a WWE ring. And when you just say athletes, I think they've got an argument.
Oh yeah, for what they brought to the game before that, their amateur background. In terms of being able to physically wrestle, I mean, Angle, it's very hard to beat him. And Brock, you know, he's just a machine. We know that now, looking at him. I mean, look at him now. He's now got a ponytail, running about with a cowboy hat, having an absolute time of his life.
Yeah.
And 20 years ago, he could have died because he tried to do a shooting star press at WrestleMania. See if Brock hits a shooting star press on Omos, or did hit a shooting star press on Omos.
We're not ready.
Oh, God. But yeah, that is WrestleMania 19. As listeners who have not watched this show before can probably tell that me and Chris are very high on this show. We're very interested to see what Mr. Money gives this show out of 5, as we always do with these pay-per-view reviews. Chris, what's your going with?
Right. I knew you'd do this. Because you always have a 5-star system. And I was really struggling with this last night. Because I think this is as close to perfect as you can get. I remember by the time we got to the kind of 20s, when we had like Cena Michaels, Cena Triple H, or like Triple H, Benoit Michaels. By that era, I feel like everything I was just comparing to 19. And then once we get into the kind of more modern era of wrestling, like Roman Reigns, Lesnar. And I remember thinking, I think it was the one that had Charlotte Flair versus Asuka. I remember thinking that WrestleMania was
34.
I remember thinking that was a really special WrestleMania. But this is so high on my list. I think I'm willing to say it's the second best WrestleMania ever after 17. I don't think that'll surprise anyone that it's the in my eyes, it's the second best one ever. And I really struggled with a score because I was like, is it perfect? And I was like, is any wrestling pay-per-view perfect? But if I was officially giving it a score, I'm going to take off 0.5 for the Miller Lite catfight girls. And do I want to take off 0.5 for Booker T and Rey Mysterio not winning? No, I'm not going to mark them down for that. I'm going to give this a 4.5 out of 5. I'm going high.
Yeah. I thought you were going to go high. I'm going to go 4.
Yeah.
I'm going 4 on this one. I think it's brilliant. I love this pay-per-view. I love this WrestleMania. I find it hard to find. 17 is my favourite. I would have this one very, very high. I like 20 for the spectacle. Mm-hmm. But I think as a wrestling pay-per-view, I think that's better. 20 is quite loaded.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of matches, and there's some good 30s. 30s great as well. So 28.
I just think they like. I've said repeatedly on this, they got the pacing really right. I think that they had the peaks and troughs at the right time. They had 9 matches officially on the card. If we take out the cat fight, I think that's a brilliant number. You know, AEW Revolution had 15 matches. I think it was All Out had 15 matches. Revolution had the Iron Man. 9 matches on a WrestleMania card, that's perfect. And then, right, stop me when one of these wrestlers isn't a Hall of Famer, right? Kurt Angle, Brock Lesnar, Stone Cold, The Rock, Hogan, Vince, Triple H, Booker T, Limp Bizkit, Chris Jericho, Shawn Michaels. That goes all the way back to the tag match. You know, Guerrero's, Benoit, Rhino. Benoit's probably not getting in anytime soon. Angle, Trish Stratus, Jazz, Victoria, Undertaker, Nathan Jones, Big Show, A-Train, Matt Hardy, Rey Mysterio. They've almost got, I think the whole card is almost like Hall of Famers, top to bottom. Almost. A couple of questionable ones in there. And yeah, I think they just did so well with what they had.
It's a fantastic card. And really, if you've not watched it, I do implore you, go back and watch it. If you've watched it, if you've listened to this before watching that, then well done to you. but go back and watch it. If you've, honestly, it's great. If you enjoy this type of content, if you like hearing how people will look back on the pay-per-views, we've done lots of pay-per-view reviews on this particular show. Me, Chris, included, I've done a majority of them, along with Gary. Lots of the historical stuff. So you go back, look at our back catalogue, subscribe to us. You'll hear so many more pay-per-view reviews. We've got more coming up over the year. And we might not be as high on a pay-per-view. I doubt we're going to be as high as on a pay-per-view this year. We'll probably do one in the summer. It'll end up being King of the Ring 96 or something like that. I don't know. but yeah, that's the type of stuff we're coming up. We've got so much content here on ESSR to enjoy. Feature shows like this, our Saturday Draft Live show, even ESSR Central. Well, this week we should be able to have a review coming up of WrestleMania with the previews last week. So much great content here on the channel. Chris, I'd like to thank you for joining me and giving your expert analysis on all things obscure on these cards.
Thank you so much. I'm so happy we got to do this. This is the one time I'll ever say this, and don't be offended when you hear this, Gary and Derek, but I'm so happy that Derek is in Spain and Gary's at WrestleMania, because it just gave us more time to talk about how much we love this show. And you never know, those two might have brought down our average if they'd got involved. But yeah, just, oh man, I may go back and watch it just now, even though I watched it less than 24 hours ago.
I love you saying that we're better off than they two. One was at Mania in Florida, the other one was in Spain. And we're sitting here on a Tuesday night. No, Monday night, sorry, at time of record. Talking about that resume now. From us all, ESSR, I'm Steve Wilson. I hope you've enjoyed, and we will see you next time.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round 2. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah. Sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.